Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another podcast. I'm Christina Vogt, assistant editor for Consultant360.com. I'm speaking today with Dr. Eileen O'Grady, who is a certified nurse practitioner and wellness coach, founder of the School of Wellness, and an advisory board member of Nutrition 411. Thank you for joining me, Dr. O'Grady.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Today, we will be discussing practical strategies that Dr. O'Grady has used in her own practice to help her patients meet their weight loss goals and overcome obstacles that may arise in their journey to better health. So, Dr. O'Grady, there are so many patients who want to lose weight but ultimately fail to do so. In your own practice, how do you help your patients successfully lose weight?
Yeah, great question. Thank you. Well, it starts with finding a personal motivator, which is different for each person. You know, asking them, why now? Why is this important to you now? So, you know, when I went through school, I learned that we just sort of tell people what to do, that we provide all this expertise, and if they just do what we tell them to do, you know, they'll lose weight. And unfortunately, that doesn't really work. So there has to be a really big why, and that's often an excavation project that we have to kind of pull out of the person. So if they come to you, or if you have some data points that, you know, are pretty ominous that their health is going downhill because of this overweight condition, we have to identify, you know, what is going to motivate them to do this. And the reason I say that is because being overweight is an adaptive problem. It's something that is not a technical problem. So a technical problem is learning how to suture or even doing open heart surgery or flying to the moon. Those are, if you get enough experts on board, there's enough technical capacity to make that happen. But an adaptive problem is a much harder problem to solve because there's many points along the way that have to be impacted. So an example of an adaptive problem is the obesity epidemic nationwide. You know, what does the CDC recommend to do? This big problem, there's no one point where it starts and ends. And so we have, you know, an infectious disease at the hospital. Trying to reduce infections in the hospital is an adaptive problem, so that it can't be solved by edict, by experts coming on down with the answers, that it has to be solved by the people in the problem. So hence, it's so important to identify somebody's motivation. And it often requires somebody changing their identity from an overweight person to someone who's fit and active and cares about what they eat. So there's a lot of mindset that has to happen. And the problem is that we have so much information at our fingertips now. We can ask Google just about anything and it's available, and it hasn't really helped us. You know, what's really missing is wisdom. So identifying that personal motivator and asking them, why is this important and why now? Because they have to form new habits and drop old ones, which is not easy to do. It's so easy to go back to our default. And so I often will ask people, what are your top three priorities in your life? And for the most of the people that I work with, losing this weight, you know, sometimes it's 100 pounds or 70 pounds or 150 pounds. It is constraining every part of their life. It is the most important priority. Yet when they're living their life, they often will be very dismissive about it. You know, they'll go to the Super Bowl party and say, ah, I'll just have this one thing. So what I like to talk to people about is, if this is your number one priority, then you have to make sure that anyone looking at your life from the outside would see that you are living your priority. So if someone came in from outer space and looked at you, they would notice, ah, this person is on a mission. They're planning their meals. They're careful about what they're doing. So really helping them identify those top three priorities is very helpful. And also, you know, I always have to, you know, not solve this as a technical problem. That's often what we do, is we just tell them what to eat, and it's an adaptive problem. So often, you know, what's eating you? And I love the question, the powerful question that I ask at the very beginning of my sessions with clients is, why are you overweight? You know, profoundly simple question, but there's often just one or two things that they're doing that are causing this condition. Emotional eating, nighttime eating, you know, whatever it might be, you know, a sugar problem. So, you know, really nailing down what is causing this is an important step in this. So I always ask powerful questions, you know, what's eating you? So people eat all kinds of things other than hunger, Christina, like loneliness, ill-suited work, you know, anxiety, whatever it might be. And what happens is, we're having a lot of anxiety or we're lonely, so we turn to sheet cake and we eat that. It only ramps up the anxiety more, making us, you know, feel more self-revulsion, et cetera. So, you know, really trying to identify and name the emotion that's happening and then try to meet it more accurately. If you're lonely, let's figure out how to build a tribe, because the food is actually exacerbating the loneliness or the anxiety or whatever the emotion is. So, you know, I think we have to treat this as an adaptive problem that's highly complex. And the person with the problem has to be heavily involved. So you could do, you know, what I do with my clients is have them write their best future self. So people listening, physicians and clinicians can say, you know, I want you to write down in 3 years, if your life went amazingly well, what would be in place, particularly with regard to this weight loss? Like, what would change in your life? What would you be doing every day if you were at some goal weight of yours? And then you leave the room and go see another patient. Because the idea is, when we're looking at the coaching model, the patient is doing the work, that we're not banging our heads against the wall or feeling, you know, frustrated, that the patient is doing the work. This is their work, their internal work. And so, you know, we often as clinicians can have the data points to say, like many of my clients, my physician told me I'm going to be dead in 5 years if I don't change my ways. So therefore, we have to present those data points, but then there's more we can do with that, like asking these powerful questions, like, what would your life be like if everything went amazingly well? What would your life be like if you weren't overweight? What would your life be like if you were at your goal, or if you didn't have any kind of limitation at all? What kinds of new freedoms would you have? That's how we get people motivated.
Do your patients have to rely on willpower for weight loss?
Yes, so that's a good one. I mean, it's not reliable. We know when we look at judges who sentence criminals, at the end of the day, they're much harsher by the end of the day because people are worn down. And what we know from motivational science and goal attainment science, there's some wonderful research about this, is that, you know, willpower weakens. It's a muscle and it weakens over time. So we've learned, for example, to not, and this is why the New Year's resolutions are fall away, is because people are too ambitious and they don't isolate. So sometimes there's a small amount of willpower, particularly when we have cravings in the beginning when we're forming a new habit, but it weakens over time and it's never a good thing to rely on or to build a plan around. I'm just going to power through, because that is really set up to fail. And if we have too many goals, which is often the problem with New Year's resolutions, is that they're also set up to fail. So for example, if I'm working with somebody who isn't exercising currently and they want to lose, you know, a significant amount of weight, the very first thing is to start to get some new habits in place and work on the relationship with food and really isolate that. They drop 30 or 40 pounds. They just feel better. And very organically, they say, you know, I'm ready to start moving. They just feel better and it's more comfortable. And then we start to add movement. So, you know, I never tell people don't exercise, because it's hugely helpful for longevity and all kinds of things. But if they're not doing it already, then it's important to just isolate the relationship to food. So willpower is not reliable. It weakens. And then what's often required rather than willpower is to change the physical environment to make it easy to drop the old habit and develop the new. I've had clients that have lost 70 or 80 pounds just by having a plan, you know, getting to the store, getting the food they need, or having some kind of a plan. So they have to change the physical environment and they have to change the mindset, so that when they do have a setback or whatever happens, they fall off, they get right back on. And so this idea of, rather than willpower, is having a plan is the key thing, and never building a plan around willpower.
How does the cycle of change fit into this?
Well, yeah, so there's that wonderful science around, you know, how adults enter into change space. So we start out in resistance. We're not interested in change, don't want to hear it. And then we move into contemplation. And that's in that place of ambivalence. We want to, but we're not sure. And so this is where people can hang out for decades. You know, they've tried in the past, but they've failed. So they want to, but they don't have the confidence, or they don't have what we call the self-efficacy to change. So this is important because, I mean, to me, the most important part of the cycle of change is when people are in resistance. We actually are causing harm if we start telling them what to do. So if, you know, any of you have teenagers out there, you know, start telling a resistant teenager what to do, and you're going to dig them deeper into resistance. We actually, you know, make it worse. So I think here we want to kind of stage where they are. And even if we start telling people in contemplation what to do, it can make it worse. It drives them back into deeper ambivalence or resistance. So what we want to do is be much more skillful about where they are in the cycle of change. And in fact, the only stage that advice is really useful is when people are actually in action. They're actually changing their eating habits, they're changing their habits, and they're having a problem at a certain time of day or some eating pattern that they're having trouble with. That's when advice is useful. And only about 30% of the population at any given time are in action. But our health system is sort of set up to think that everybody is ready to receive this advice. So when people are in contemplation, having a much more skillful conversation, asking those motivational questions, those powerful questions, why is this important and why now? Because if we don't have that backpack of personal motivation, a really big why on board, no change is going to last or be sustainable. So I don't even talk to people if they're not interested in changing. We just say, you know, when you're ready, you come back and talk to me. I can help you or work with you. But if people are not ready and they don't have a powerful motivator, there'll be no lasting change.
Thanks again for joining me today, Dr. O'Grady.
It was lovely. Thank you so much.